The next frontier in AI is reinforcement learning or reinforcement learning labs. The market is a capital allocation problem under uncertainty over multi-horizon periods. Autonomous doesn't mean the system is unattended. If you don't own the model, which 99% don't, you don't own the alpha. So, you know, things going haywire and jumping from one asset class to another.
Forget about it, as they would say in the mob in New York.
Welcome to Against Consensus, a weekly podcast in collaboration with FinNews. I'm your host, Angelo Calvello, and in each 30-minute episode, I interview asset owners, asset managers, service providers, and innovators who are challenging conventional thinking to create better investment outcomes for their beneficiaries and clients. Our goal is to elevate the conversation and help you make smarter investment decisions, always with a little edginess along the way. Today, we're featuring our first emerging manager, Sebastian or Seb Owen, co-founder and CEO of Alpha Circle AI. I asked Seb to be on the show because Alpha Circle is a true emerging manager that's taking a different approach, an approach that challenges and pushes back on the status quo, and it aligns perfectly with Against Consensus's credo that consensus thinking is the enemy of better investment outcomes. In this episode, we explore what inspired Seb and his colleagues to found Alpha Circle, why they decided to build a proprietary model that solves what he believes to be the fundamental investment problem, and I agree with him here, the problem of how to allocate capital optimally at time T to achieve the desired investment results. We dig deep into his deep reinforcement learning model, and he explains why deep reinforcement learning and not Gen AI and LLMs is the right choice to solve this problem. We unpack Alpha Circle's scalable DRL architecture, and we look at how he applied this architecture, this system, to a portfolio of U.S. large cap equities. You can find links to Seb's bio, Alpha Circle's website, and other documentation in the show notes. And if you're an emerging manager and you're taking a different approach to investing, contact me. I got a soft spot for you. You know, I had that soft spot because I was the co-founder of Blue Diamond Asset Management and Rosetta Analytics, and I know how hard it is to get your message out. My email's in the show notes. I hope you enjoy the show. Seb Owen, welcome to Against Consensus.
Thanks very much, Angelo. It's an honor to be here. I'm very much looking forward to our talk today. I think it's going to be a very timely discussion and an important discussion around advanced AI in financial markets or asset management, and even beyond.
Before we jump in, man, I got to give you a few warm-up questions. I want to make sure you're ready to go. You ready?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Cats or dogs?
Ooh, cats. I like cats.
Okay, that'll end our recording here. I'm sorry. Sweet or
savory? I like if you said cats or an Alsatian dog with a big house and a big garden, you know, I can take the dog for a walk and have two, then I'll probably go for the two Alsatians.
Okay, that wasn't the question. Sweet or savory?
Savory.
All right. Amsterdam Canal Side or Amsterdam Cafe Terrace?
Canal Side.
All right. Stroopwafel or Bitterballen?
Bitterballen.
Okay, and finally,
are you checking my authenticity? I mean, I just said, you know, sweet or savory and then Bitterballen or Stroopwafel. Okay, well, no, Bitterballen okay. For sure.
Yeah. Okay. Founder versus operator. You know, you've had multiple ventures. Do you enjoy like the 0-1 founding phase or the scaling operating phase?
Founder.
There you go. That was an easy question.
Yeah.
And, you know, Seb, just a little background for the listeners and viewers. You connected with me, I'm going to say several months ago, because you saw that I had done some previous work with my team on deep reinforcement learning. We've exchanged some notes. We've had several conversations. And just so the audience knows, I have no commercial relationship with you. I have no financial relationship. Let's put that aside. And I thought our audience would benefit from hearing more about Alpha Circle, because most emerging managers are simply spin-outs of a legacy firm. They're emerging managers in terms of their AUM, maybe, but you know, they're not really startups. They're basically alternative compensation schemes. And you and your team have rejected that path. So I'm going to ask you, what made you decide to build something from scratch with no guarantee that what you built would work and be commercially viable? Big risk there.
We haven't rejected that path because now, after 5 years, we've come to that first path. But maybe later on in the talk, we'll come to that, right? You know, us becoming an emerging manager. No, the way we started was that indeed, you know, emerging manager or becoming an emerging manager was never on our, you know, on our horizon. I teamed up with a group of very capable technology AI engineers back in 2016 in the Ukraine. And we started as of 2017, 2018, we started developing engineering a proprietary, sophisticated alternative data sets for the financial markets. Think of, you know, analyzing, you know, filings and correlated that with price movements. You know, we built something for a couple of quant firms around the GameStop saga on Wall Street Bets, you know, the Reddit monitoring. So we were very much involved in that because we have a very deep expertise around all things text extraction, natural language understanding, and so forth. However, part of our engineering team were also big robotics fans, right? And they were closely also monitoring, you know, the things that DeepMind, and later that became, you know, Google DeepMind, were doing around deep reinforcement learning, the technology that is used in self-driving cars, and obviously was made, you know, really public, you know, globally by DeepMind, by AlphaGo and AlphaFold. And they started looking at that super challenging field of AI, which, you know, deep reinforcement learning is, as you well know, is to look at, okay, well, how can we apply that challenging field towards financial markets? And the decision really became, you know, we started looking, but we'll delve a little bit into that later, I guess, in the talk, to the allocation layer, to the capital allocation layer. And, you know, the decision came, you know, can we use, if this technology is being used in a self-driving car, right, certainly then we need to be able to do that in a very critical layer of finance. And so from the outset, we started with the idea of building a new autonomous adaptive decision system. We didn't start out to build another quant model, right? This is also or a larger AI, you know, foundational model. Right. It started out 5 years ago with, can we build a new needed decision intelligence system for a certain layer of asset management?
Okay, so you saw a need that wasn't being addressed by traditional methodologies, correct?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so now you're telling me the foundational problem you're trying to solve is capital allocation, correct?
Yeah.
That's the core problem for you.
Absolutely, 100%.
So why did you decide to use deep reinforcement learning when there are other tools available and certainly more have become available, like LLMs? A lot of people talking about LLMs today, which uses reinforcement learning, but that's not what you're doing, from what I understand.
So there's actually, I think I'm hearing two questions here. Let me start, first of all, why did we pick capital allocation?
Sure.
So we started looking into asset management and a lot of the workflows around asset management were either being automated, software was put, you know, to these workflows, and nowadays, you know, people are trying to use LLMs, we'll get to that in a bit, to augment those workflows, right? So whether that is, you know, research, whether it's execution, whether it's risk management, but the most critical layer of asset management, which is the allocation layer, right, remained very much a human system, right? Human portfolio managers, or a static rule-based system like a quant model, right? And the other thing that was, it's important there is that we started looking at markets that were becoming and are becoming structurally non-stationary. Right, so this is the interconnectivity of market data, the velocity of data, the volume of data, the relationships in data, and that requires something that is adaptive, right? And that learns, as opposed to a static human-based system that allocates. So the first question is that why did we very much focus on the allocation layer? Is that, you know, the market is not, but we'll get into that. The market is not a prediction problem. It's an allocation problem under uncertainty over multi horizons. And that actually provides, you know, the outcomes. And that's not being sort of dealt with.
It's being dealt with, but you're telling me it's being dealt with suboptimally, right? I mean, the way it's being done today.
Not even that. Okay, well, going back to the capital allocation, absolutely.
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
yeah,
you know, the facts are, you know, and I think it's, I don't know what the number is, 93%, it might have changed, but of all active, you know, portfolio managers, right, have underperformed, certainly within the equity class, over a longer period of time, a passive index, right, or a large index. So clearly, you know, there is a problem there, right? Because, you know, capital is being mismanaged. So those are the three factors: capital allocation, non-stationary markets. You need an adaptive kind of system to you look at that. You need a better decision system, right? And that's how we arrived there. To move to large language models, I think large language models are fantastic, right? I mean, they are fantastic in finding information, you know, gaining information, gaining knowledge, extracting, summarizing text, et cetera, et cetera. But at the very end of the day, or into its core, a large language model is nothing but a prediction system. It provides you with the probability of a prediction of a next token, right? And it's a language problem. And the market is not a language problem. It's not a prediction problem. We can have a gazillion billion predictions which provide information. At the end of the day, we still need to allocate that allocation, right? Across capital. If you and I were to receive the same prediction or information, right, and both at the same speed, or maybe you are a little bit faster than me because I'm using the latest foundational LLM, we would still end up with a different allocation. Now, that could be part of our mandate that we're running. It also could be our human bias, right? It could be our risk profile, you know, that we're seeing in the market, and so forth and so forth. So it's not about, you know, getting a better or faster prediction signal. You need to allocate that. So the stance we're taking, and this is really important, why we chose the field of deep reinforcement learning, because that actually is a learning system that makes decisions that generate outcomes, because the market is a capital allocation problem under uncertainty over multi-horizon periods, right? It's a sequential decision system that needs to be sequential decisions that impact each other, by the way, or each decision impacts the future, right? And you're doing that under uncertainty, and you're doing that over an extended period of time. So that is sort of the reason why we started to choose deep reinforcement learning over large language models.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about deep reinforcement learning. I mean, I don't mean to be pedantic, I understand it, but it's not a term that's used widely in our industry. So how does it work?
Let's start with reinforcement learning, right? And I'll try to explain that with a very simple, you know, example. It's learning, it's a learning paradigm, right? Within the field of artificial intelligence, and it learns by trial and error. Reinforcement learning, it's almost like if you make it really simple, it's the simple version, in the sense that reinforcement learning is very applicable, very, you know, well applicable into a confined space, in a small environment. And what it does, it memorizes something, right? And it becomes very good at making decisions. For instance, if we were to drop a cat, going back to your cats and dogs, right, in a small village, and we tell the cat, this is the reward, to find some fish, but then the risk, you're not being chased by a dog, then it starts trial and error, and eventually it memorizes all the streets in that little village, right? That is reinforcement learning, but that's not the market, because the market is Manhattan with huge traffic jam, right, at the rush hour. That's the market. So that is dropping our same cat in Manhattan that he's never seen before, giving him the same reward and not being chased by dogs, and maybe in Manhattan not get chased by the mob, right? but now it does not have the capability to memorize all these different streets and avenues. So it starts to learn by experience. It starts to understand patterns. And that's where you bring in deep learning into reinforcement learning to create deep reinforcement learning, right? So it's a combination of deep learning and reinforcement learning, because then you start to understand patterns. And that is extremely useful and necessary in a high-dimensional, extremely complex, ever-changing market, which the financial markets are.
The example I used to use, wasn't thinking of cats, but...
Well, you started the cats and dogs.
I did. You're right. I did. So I deserve it. But the way I thought about it was I would explain to people trial and error. This is how a child learns to walk, through trial and error.
Yes.
They learn to walk on carpet, on an incline. They learn to go up and down stairs, on sand. But they're not programmed. So they need to take left foot, right foot. It's through trial and error in a certain environment. They take an action. Here, the reward is kind of locomotion, moving across the room. But, you know, they fall, they get up, they fall, they get up. And, you know, that's the beauty, I think, of deep reinforcement learning is the trial and error. And then it's really data driven. I mean, you're not doing deterministic programming on the front end of this thing, right?
Yeah, no, 100%. And also, maybe another way to put it is that, you know, these large language models, they are very much about discovering knowledge or information. Reinforcement learning and then deep reinforcement learning, they make a decision that leads to an outcome. And that outcome is something that optimizes a long-term reward. So it makes a decision, goes up the chair, you know, the stairs like a child or the cat, you know, chasing you in order to optimize his longer-term outcome. Right. So it's, and that is far closer going back to our. It's almost like foundational strapline. The market is a sequential decision problem under uncertainty. That's why you need deep reinforcement learning to attack this, and you cannot do that with large language models. Large language models, fantastic, right? For research, getting, you know, greater research and so forth. But then, you know, you end up in a even deeper conversation about, okay, well, you know, if everybody gets access to the same thing, how fast is the alpha decay? And then there are other elements that, you know, most in the market, something that, by the way, we'll see surfacing more and more, is that how do you explain a large language model? How do you, you know, are you incorporating information processing costs in your large language models, you know, with the returns you're showing? And, you know, that gets into a discussion maybe for another podcast that, you know, one of the statements that we're making is that if you don't own the model, which 99% don't, you don't own the alpha.
Okay, so a couple things to unpack from here. Let's stay with that. This is all proprietary IP.
100%.
You and your colleagues built this from the ground up.
Yep.
I would think one of the challenges would be finding talent in this space, because this is, it, just because you know Python doesn't mean you could do deep reinforcement learning. And how did you put together the team? Tell me a little bit about the team, because it's not just you.
No, so, you know, I ended up on my travels through the world back in 2016 in a place called Kharkiv, which is the second largest city in Ukraine. It formerly used to be one of the science capitals of the Soviet Union, when Ukraine was still part of the Soviet Union. Deep expertise around everything, you know, involving applied mathematics and rocket engineering. And I ended up with a team that consisted of multiple engineers and technology guys that have been together for a long, long time. I think they originated in 1996. Lots of, you know, professors from Kharkiv National University of Radio Electronics were on the team. So, you know, it was a large team, or a larger team with lots of very smart engineers, technology engineers, and that at some point, you know, moved into a lot sooner than many others. Going back to, you know, your comments about scarcity of capital, what we have built from scratch is very much a very impressive engineering feat, right? Because building building an institutional grade, production grade, institutional production grade DRL system, and then also we have a two-layer DRL system, that requires engineering capability across multiple fields. So it's a multidisciplinary engineering problem because you need to have understanding around risk management, about reward function, about structuring chaotic, you know, state spaces, machine learning, governance, compliance, financial markets, right? And bringing that together, that needs to be done by, you know, some very smart people that have knowledge around all these fields.
Let me just stop you real quick. I mean, I think what you're telling me is, okay, AI native firm, but do any of your colleagues come from the investment side?
No, they don't.
Yeah, sounds like it's all science and engineering.
I'm the only one that comes from the financial markets, area. But like I said, when we started moving with alternative data, obviously back in 2016, 17, 18, that's when they, started entering the financial markets, themselves. And that's why they also became interested in that very, complex environment that is the financial markets.
I always found it refreshing to have engineers and scientists that, I don't mean to say it poorly, but don't know anything about, they're not coming to you saying, oh, we always did this at BlackRock. They're like, hey, we've got this problem. Let's figure out how to solve this problem using our engineering and scientific skills.
It's a great comment because, in fact, the way we hire, and if we look at also the buildup of the team, most of these guys don't even have they have a technology background, but, we have people from statistics, right? We have people, we have molecular biologists. We have a geneticist that have moved from their, we have physics people that have come from very different fields, attacking something from a very different angle, and then applying it to deep academic research and science, and then applying that to financial markets.
Okay, so I understand you're now applying it to financial markets, and you're trying to solve this problem of capital allocation, or to me, it's an optimization problem.
Yes,
how
100%.
Do we allocate capital optimally to achieve a certain result? Maybe a pension fund needs to meet its funding liability. An endowment needs to meet its spending requirements. So, I mean, what did you build? Now that you've got this technology, you've talked about data. I mean, what did you guys actually build?
Just to confirm, what you say, it's an optimization problem under uncertainty. And you need to build a capital allocation system that continuously allocates capital under uncertainty, under ever-changing markets. So it adapts to the market that it's now seeing. Right. So when there's a self-driving car and we say, okay, we'll drive from, New York to Boston every day, do it as safe as possible, do it with less, fuel consumption and as fast as possible. Every day is going to be encountering a new highway, right? Or a new weather pattern or, and so forth, right? So it's an optimization problem that continuously changes. That's the learning mechanism and the adaptability is really, something important. Now, what have we built? So we've built what we call a machine native capital allocation infrastructure that uses deep reinforcement learning to allocate capital with risk embedded. And the process really starts with, first of all, with a proprietary way of building new small portfolios of stocks. Right. In this case, because this is our first strategy, we're moving into the equity asset class. The platform, by the way, is asset class agnostic, so we can move that into other asset classes, but we've started with equities. The first thing is that we build small portfolios, which we call swing sets. So there is a portfolio construction framework that is being built. And basically these swing sets, these small portfolios are anywhere up to 10 or 12 individual stocks that are all related, given all kinds of parameters. So they're all related to real estate, or they're all related to AI, or they're all related to climate, but they are heavily uncorrelated. Once we have that in place and we have the sound correlation numbers available, that takes, a couple of, seconds, we run that through our machine, and then the machine actually looks if that little portfolio has actually some kind of predictive value optimization capability. Okay. So we've created a number of these swing sets. In fact, in our first strategy, we are running 10 individual portfolios that are managed individually by a DRL agent / specialized portfolio manager that, based on the input, and I'll get to that, is making an allocation decision just solely on his or her individual portfolio. It's almost like Angelo would become the manager of the portfolio of 10 related but uncorrelated stocks. We'll call that the AI, you know, little swing set. And based on where the market is, where the risk in the market is, where the inputs are coming from the market, you know, whether that is market data or technical data or alternative data or knowledge graphs that we're using as inputs, all proprietary, it's allocating on a daily basis, right? And we have 10 of those individual portfolio managers or DRL agents. That is layer one.
Just one second. I want to be clear. Those agents are not LLM agents like people are used to talking about.
No.
These are DRL.
No. Those are DRL agents, individual agents that are just managing 10, 12 stocks. And they're saying, well, it's Tuesday morning. I've gathered all the data from yesterday. I am now staying long, I don't know, NVIDIA, or right. I'm removing NVIDIA and I'm moving. And they're all making one decision in that portfolio. Now, there's a lot more technicality behind it because they're also tested around the stability and around the risk, what they're taking, and so forth, and so forth. That is layer one. So you have on a daily basis, and we're moving it, by the way, to intraday, but on a daily basis, these 10 individual DRL agents are making decision about their 10 portfolios that they're managing. See it as if, you know, you are sitting at a multi-strat firm and you have 10 pods, right? 10 portfolio managers, and they're making a daily basis and they're saying, Angelo, this is my decision for the day. Then comes layer two, that's the DRL allocator, call it the referee, the central bank, that says, okay, well, I'm looking at all these signals, these 10 signals. I'm looking at the stability of these signals towards each other. I'm going to have a relook at where I feel the market is, given where you think the market is, with risk and all the data. And then it starts allocating over those 10 decisions. Right? So it might say, okay, we'll allocate 4% of our capital today to the AI swing set, or we'll allocate 7% to the real estate. It might also say, and it doesn't happen very often, given the nervousness where the market is based on our proprietary turbulence index that we've developed, it might say, I really want to stay in cash for 5% or 10%, right? So it's also the investment committee, which is there in a multi-strat firm, that is also now done by a DRL investment committee, right? And that also makes our first strategy, our first pod, as it were, we're managing now multiple assets, right, within equity. So we're managing for our first strategy, US large cap, long only, unlevered, 90 selected large caps at any moment in time. And that is fully done by this two-layer deep reinforcement learning architecture system.
Okay. So the one thing that I want to learn is when you talked about deep reinforcement learning, there was an objective. In your example, the cat is going to find a fish.
Yeah.
That was the reward it would receive for going all over.
Yeah.
What are you trying to achieve with this system that has a reward or rewards it's trying to maximize, right?
Yep. So when we were building, you know, the system, we tested a lot of these reward models, right? In various circumstances, you know, lots of hundreds of models tested, you know, there was an internal competition that we had, and so forth, and so forth. But we found out that doing it even in a smarter way, you had to go back to structuring the input side. You had to structure a market. It's almost like you had to come up with, in the chaotic space that the market is, the financial market is, at any moment in time, you actually can find structure. That's where we start building in the risk element, which is inside the system, right? So that's also very important. This system is not going out there with an objective, this is going back to your question, of maximizing reward at any old cost. In fact, it's actually a risk-first system. So before it actually goes out and catch the fish, the cat, it makes sure that it's not going to be eaten or chased by a dog, or in the case of Manhattan, handed over to the mob. Right? That is the important element there. So if you're talking about what is the long-term objective, the long-term objective is to continuously allocate capital to find the highest possible risk-adjusted return given a market that continuously changes.
Now, you've got the strategy. How long have you been running this strategy?
We have actually, in an earlier generation system, we've actually deployed real capital, our own capital, small, in live markets for 3 years.
Okay.
But that was an earlier generation system. Obviously, you know, the system has been upgraded because it sees continuous further R&D to make it, you know, even better, smarter, and so forth.
How often do you retrain the model?
At the moment, we're doing that in anywhere between 4 to 6 months. I think the question, the implicit question is, you know, what do you do about alpha decay, right? Which is really important. Our alpha decay, we can see that because the system is continuously monitored and we're building an automated signaling around alpha decay, but it's over 9 months, which is really, you know, really long. So we are well within that window of 9 months to retrain it. When we start, you know, moving and originating our own AI native hedge fund, that retraining will be done monthly, right? To be absolutely sure about. But there will also be, you know, and we're not there yet. I mean, we're doing this, you know, that's just ongoing R&D to make that into an automated signaling about exactly where the alpha decay starts in order to have a sort of a warning sign of possible alpha decay, right?
Yeah, okay. So I get that. And I understand for a different application, you may retrain on a different time period. I get that. But I want to go step back, or I don't know if I'm going forward or back because the cat's going through the city and I don't know what's going on. But the challenge here is this is a fully autonomous system. Clearly you and the team make some fundamental decisions on inputs, on design. But what about safeguards? This is a question I always got. How do you know you're not going to suddenly start trading wheat futures? I mean, it's more about the safeguards, the quality control.
Autonomous doesn't mean the system is unattended. A lot of the workflows that you see in this traditional multi-strat environment, multi-strat firm, are collapsed. They're not augmented by AI. They're being done by DRL capabilities, machines, right? And the decision-making, the allocation is done by a machine and it's autonomous and it's adaptive. But just to give you a little bit of an example, the calculations that we do at the end of every day in order to make the allocation for the next day, that takes us 2 minutes. So there's a lot of time for the humans, for the engineers to continuously monitor on quality assurance, on model integrity, on model drift. There are also guardrails put in place, you know, with, for instance, a dynamic order management tool that we've developed when we pass on the execution to an execution broker, right? In the automated execution. So the corridor for this thing to go Skynet or Terminator and to move from equities into wheat, I mean, that is maybe for a Tom Cruise movie, but it's not, you know, it's almost like it's unrealistic that this were, you know, were to happen. There is a continued, and that's also necessary, especially, you know, when you start entering the field of institutional finance, you room with governance and compliance and so forth, that is also absolutely also necessary, that there is some kind of human element in the loop, but that is, you know, moving higher up the stack in towards the compliance and governance of this machine. So things going haywire and jumping from one asset class to another, yeah.
Forget about it, as they would say in the mob in New York. Forget about it.
Yeah. You like that, huh? You like that mob analogy.
I don't. I don't like it at all. No, I don't like it at all.
No.
Okay, so you mentioned early on that the system is really agnostic to the asset that would be explored or, you know, the decision to allocate capital to an asset. You're doing it now in U.S., I think it's large cap stocks,
large cap,
right?
Yes,
I mean,
yes.
That's your fault. I mean, you got liquidity and you got good data and stuff like that. So like any good engineer, you know, the team built something that's scalable and
100%.
It's adaptable to other markets. Yeah. Now that you've got, no, go ahead. What were you going to tell me?
No, I mean, that's the, you know, I mean, it puts a smile on my face because it's indeed, you know, we've built that foundational model, right? Mm-hmm. We've built the underlying basis. So we can very rapidly, the strategy that we're now doing within the equity class equities, we can replicate that almost overnight to a European equity pod strategy, or an Asian, or a thematic equity. So the scalability around building new strategies or new pods is immense. However, this system has also been designed in such a way that it can move, and we've played around with that, to other asset classes that are very much linked to equity, whether that is fixed income or commodities, right? That basically react on similar input, you know, variables, just like equities are. We've even, you know, started dabbling around, this was already, you know, 2-3 years ago, with crypto, which is a little bit of a difficult one because that is a non-traditional asset class compared to, you know, the more traditional, although you can also see convergence there, right? So we had some results. I wouldn't say they were as strong as equities, right? But they were reasonable and certainly, you know, maybe food for thought, but then on a longer term basis or a medium term basis. So yes, the underlying is asset class agnostic, yeah, for our own strategy, yeah.
It brings a smile to my face because we did launch a DRL-based BTC strategy and an ETH strategy, and it worked pretty well. In our case, our model design, it seemed to really like volatility. The more volatile the market was, the more robust the model seemed to be. And again, we didn't design it that way. That's just an observation. Somehow, maybe it's like the cat in the city. It kind of likes making left turns instead of right turns. What do I know? It also sounds like you've built this firm and it's running money, and it could run more money in that strategy or different strategies. But it sounds like what you really built is a kind of a turnkey AI lab, and not like a, you know, an LLM lab, or you could build somebody an agent that's going to read a Edgar report. I mean, this is, you know, a full-time lab here. Am I right?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think the strength, the innovation that we're going to be doing is not originating an AI native hedge fund. The innovation is the underlying technology that we've built. And that for us provides enormous optionality, right? Because we have that DRL lab engineering capability in-house. You know, there is a very strong moat around that, right? Also a time moat, right? That is very important. During the 5 years, we've had a lot of lessons learned. It wasn't the first model that worked, right? There's hundreds of models being tested over thousands of iterations and so forth. But that model, that underlying infrastructure, that technology provides us optionality, right? So if you look at our strategy, the first strategy is to originate, as a first deployment of this underlying technology, our own AI native hedge fund. And the reason why we're doing that is because that becomes a validator.
Proof of concept, right? It's a proof of concept.
100%. And you know, the reason why this is needed is because this is novel technology. It's cutting edge. And it's not on the radar of a lot of people yet, right? Now, there have been some successful raises, you know, over this year, you know, whether it's Equilibra, you know, a couple of weeks ago, but the big one, Ineffable Intelligence in Europe, you know, which is $1 billion seed round that really put, you know, RL or an RL lab, you know, to the forefront. But the most important thing, and you know this also having worked in the financial markets, is building trust. And we need to build trust at the very highest level, at the institutional level, with all the compliance and the governance, and obviously, you know, this thing performing in the way that it has been performing, in order for us to make it easier for potentially a phase two. And a phase two could well be that we start licensing this technology or part of the technology to the financial markets, right? And to asset managers. And then you go beyond that, you can start thinking about maybe, you know, moving that to retail and present a lighter version. But going back to your, you know, AI or DRL lab capabilities, if you start looking at within the financial markets, if you start looking at beyond just asset management, but you start looking at index rebalancing, market making, post-trade infrastructure, and you start looking at the multiple workflows that are now being augmented with AI, or those workflows, in essence, are decisions that need to be made under uncertainty, you start thinking about, okay, how can an adaptive autonomous learning system also be applied there? Because we have that very strong underlying basis, that foundation, that gives us leapfrog, you know, of building anything and looking at anything new. Now, we are not a consultancy business, you know, that we do a ad hoc and we start looking at, you know, post-trade business for X or, but yeah, the capabilities are there. And, you know, it's like what we said earlier in this chat, the engineering capabilities are there. If you really want to take it further beyond financial markets, then you start looking at other sectors. But now maybe
You're going a little far out for me, man.
But then you start moving, okay, well, there are decisions that need to be made within logistics. There are decisions need to be made about allocation of resources because of the climate. You know, there's decisions need to be made inside e-commerce platforms, right? So that sort of that thought, that bet on the fact that part of decisions that are now being made either by humans or by rule-based systems are going to be moving to adaptive learning architectures is something we clearly think is going to be happening in some way, shape, or form. And, you know, going back to this is not, you know, we're not a team that has come up with a concept or an idea, right? We've built it, so we're engineers. And we've proven it. So it's a proven technology stack, platform, infrastructure, whatever you might call it.
My final question to you, Seb, is, are you a tech firm or are you an investment firm?
I think initially we're a tech firm at the moment. We're a technology company that has decided to move in investment management, you know, with our technology. I think this is a really, really important question for the, you know, for finance itself. A couple of weeks ago, I was invited in London to moderate a panel on AI and fund operations at the Hedge Week Summit, right? And, you know, one of the things that we did also with my panel, we said, you know, okay, where, you know, how does 2030 look? I think, you know, the market should not be underestimating. I think there was a big article around, you know, San Francisco, you know, a couple of days ago on some platform that it's technology firms now entering the financial markets, right? It's not a new quant entering the market that has a new, better quant model. This is now technology. It's almost like, I wouldn't say take over, but it's now entering. That is your new competition. I think if you start looking at the role of a portfolio management going forward, or a quant going forward, that role is going to be far more of an AI engineer / architect, right?
Yeah.
That is going to be entering. And I mean, I don't want to sound, you know, big alarm bells, but it, you know, it's sometimes when I talk to even senior leadership, you know, within, you know, the financial markets, they still don't have a grasp that is actually happening. So what are we? At the moment, well, we're a technology company. We've built something, an application for the financial markets, which we're now going to be deploying in our own AI native hedge fund as a first phase, but you know, we can build that out into other things. And you know, we're early, but we might be one of the pioneers that starts building some kind of an operating system for capital allocation in, you know, for the entire asset management industry, because we believe highly, you know, with a great conviction that at least part of capital allocation 5 years from now or 10 years from now will move from human/static rule-based systems to machines/adaptive learning systems. That is, in our view, inevitable. We don't know whether that's going to be hitting, you know, at 5 years or 7 years or maybe already at 3 years, but we're actually showing that is already the case. That's already the possibility.
Seb, I'll close by saying, me asking you if you're an investment firm or a tech firm, that in itself is an antiquated bifurcation that shows an underlying bias that you can't be both, is the point, right? I mean, I think what you're telling me here is in the future, investment management firms will be tech firms. I mean, you have to be a technology-based firm.
I want, you know, this is, you know, I'm glad you make the statement. And that is an uncomfortable one.
Yeah, it is.
And we're always a little bit reserved because it's an uncomfortable message, right?
Yeah. But that's exactly why I had you as the first emerging manager on our show, is because your view of running money, to say it coarsely, I mean, you push back against the status quo. You're against consensus, which is the name of the damn show. So it fits perfectly, man. So, but hey, thanks for being on the show. I know we could continue this for hours because we've done that in the past, but we're going to cut it off here. Unless, you know, there's one more thing you want to add, I'll give you the chance.
No, I think, you know, we had a conversation, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago. And I think, you know, we presented a manifesto, which I would be more than willing to share with your audience. They can always get in contact with, you know, with us. And one of the strap lines that we have, you know, is that capital allocation is becoming software. Well, maybe, you know, based on also the last, you know, the last, you know, is there, it's capital allocation is becoming AI. And it's not, you know, this is not something which is, you know, 1 or 2 years out. It's being done, and it's being done by us. And it will happen. And from a strategic point of view, you know, this is something, you know, every investment firm, every asset manager should really start to look at this, getting this capability in-house, or start looking at this versus what they're doing now.
Well, again, thanks for being on the show. I look forward to seeing how you and your colleagues at Alpha Circle progress. I wish you the best of luck. You know that because I'm a fellow traveler when it comes to DRL. So thanks, you, Seb.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, maybe you were one of the, you know, earliest pioneers, right, in this whole thing. And, you know, you and I know that, you know, any success of any, you know, company that you start is not based so much on the idea or on the team or the business plan. It's about timing, right? And I think perhaps with your venture into DRL, you know, you were way beyond even the AI boom, right? So I can only imagine how hard that must have been, you know, for a sell. The thing is, the timing now starts to, you know, become more favorable, certainly with, you know, big attention-grabbing headlines as, you know, Mr. David Silver at DeepMind announcing a 1 billion round because, you know, the next frontier in AI is reinforcement learning or reinforcement learning labs. So I think the timing is absolutely there. It's early, but we think it's going to be a very, very large future category.
Well, I hope you're right, because at the end of the day, it's going to be clients that benefit from better investment decisions. So,
absolutely. Right?
I mean, that's why you're doing it. I mean, you know, you're there to help clients achieve the outcomes that
I'm not
seeking.
I'm not here to, you know, obviously to pitch, but our risk-adjusted returns are pretty.
We're going to a compliance area here, man. Right, Come on, we almost got through the whole thing.
All right,
okay. Seb, thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks very much for the call, and you know, it's great to be on the show.
Thanks for listening. And be sure to subscribe to the show on the podcast app of your choice and follow us on the Against Consensus YouTube channel. You can also find episodes at the Against Consensus website, and the show's episodes will be on FinNews' website. Also, it'd be great if you could follow us on LinkedIn. All the links are in the show notes. If you have someone who belongs in this conversation, an asset owner, an asset manager, a service provider, send them my way. If you represent an organization that wants to reach the most sophisticated audience in institutional investing, then let's talk about a sponsorship. And if you're an emerging manager with a genuinely differentiated investment approach, let's talk about creating a custom episode for you that can help you build your brand. And in case you're wondering, our music is provided by the Super Trio, courtesy of the Northrop family. No AI-generated music for us. Thank you for your support, and we'll see you next time. Namaste.
All opinions expressed by hosts and guests are solely their own. The information presented in this podcast is for educational and informational purposes only. The host, guests, and their affiliated organizations are not providing investment, legal, tax, or financial advice. Investment strategies discussed may not be suitable for all investors, as individual circumstances may vary.
This episode is brought to you by Castos Productions.